Mike Murray in the Skyline Studios. It's time for the Wintrust Business Lunch. Ryan O'Halloran is the Chief Technology Officer at a company called Access One, and he joins us now for the Wintrust Business Lunch. Ryan, great to have you back on the show. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back. I really appreciate it.
Hey, explain to people what Access One is, first of all.
Sure, no problem. So Access One's a technology success provider. Really what we do is we try to take the plethora of different solutions that are out there from, you know, what's in the cloud and what's security concerns and all the connectivity in between down to your users day to day that just need help, best support. And we just try to make the best possible experience for them.
I love that you dumb it down for guys like me. What is the number one question companies ask you when they hire you guys?
It's very cybersecurity focused. It's about how do I prepare, and with so much going on, how do I prioritize? Because I only have so much money and so much time.
How do you prioritize? How do you do that?
You know, that's one of the things that I think we add the most value with. So as consultants, what we do is there's actually frameworks out there that we utilize that are blueprints of the good things to do. And what I find is now when I go out to customers' environments, they've spent, you know, years doing a lot of preventative and resistive controls, you know, putting in firewalls and antivirus and things like that. But what they haven't focused on is where we're at today. It's the responsive phase. You know, we now have to respond to things. It's the normal. I think it's 75% of businesses that get incidents, you know, pretty much every single day. So it's more than the norm.
Yeah.
So because you can't stop it, what you need to do is become resilient. And those are the gaps that I'm trying to fill for my customers. How do we respond and recover with the least, you know, loss in those particular events, and then learn from those events so we can get better moving forward?
My visual is you have a back room at Access One, and it's very dark, and there you got about 20 guys, and they just try to come up with ideas that's, you know, that'll stop these breaches. Am I right or wrong?
You're not far off. Yeah, everyone's trying to tackle it. You know, it's an insurmountable task. So what we really try to do is stay on top of the pulse, you know, as much as we can, because the rhythm and cadence is just so intense. But, you know, we stay in the mix and we stay informed. And then we just make sure that we bring that to our customers so that they're as prepared as they possibly can be.
We're talking with Ryan O'Halloran. He's the Chief Technology Officer at Access One. I mean, we hear about breaches all the time. How do you prepare for a breach? I mean, you don't know what's going to happen, but how do you prepare for that?
Yeah, so this is the big thing. So there's a few factors to this, right, to demonstrate kind of due care for those incidents. One is with security awareness training. So that's something that a lot of businesses have actually, you know, gotten into over the past year or two, where they fake phish, you know, their users with the fake emails and things like that, so that they can really get them used to this happening all of the time in the culture. And then that way you can learn from it and just kind of be hyper aware of it to where it almost becomes intuitive. The other things that you can do are really about having actual plans to respond. So one of the number one things with written policies, a lot of organizations have what you would call a disaster recovery plan, right? And that's a procedure to restore the systems technically and things like that. Incident response is a different animal. It's not technical at all. It's about, you know, how do you maintain good communication to the public, the stakeholders, the technical folks, the end users, right, so that it's not complete chaos. And there's a method to that madness, and you can test. So one of the things that we do for businesses specifically is we go in and do what's called a tabletop exercise. And it's a very kind of informal process where you sit down and you talk through one of these incidents and actually practice.
Oh, wow.
And it's very easy, you know, half hour, hey, this happens, imagine we got this malware, what do you do? And someone will go and say, well, I'll go immediately and unplug the computer. And then I'll explain, well, no, you don't want to do that. Disconnect it from the network, but don't shut it off.
Right.
Because you're actually not preserving the evidence that we need to learn from this, right?
Right.
And
right.
that one little sliver of something different makes a difference.
Well, do companies nowadays budget for this, for cybersecurity?
They do, and it's not enough. You know, it used to be like something like 4% when no one really, you know, cared about it and it wasn't in the mix. IBM states you should be spending about 14% of your IT budget, yet only 14% of businesses in general spend more than 10%. So we're a little bit in the middle on that, and that's the tough part. Is it's very expensive,
yeah,
but it's also now a requirement. And then now that it requires the business culture to change, where you're socializing it and you've got to get the business guys involved. I mean, there's only so much time and money to go around, and I think that circles back to the priority piece, you know, because they need the right amount of security for them. And in some cases, you can go crazy and spend all the money on this stuff. And even though you have all these mature controls, you got to look at what your actual risks are. You know, otherwise it could actually be not a good thing or a bad business decision to be too control heavy or have too much security when you haven't actually looked at where your business risks are. And that's kind of the problem I think we come in and try to solve is, you know, identify what's reasonable and what can make the biggest impact with the time and the money you do have. And then just, you know, tie that to a life cycle.
Right. I mean, if I'm a business owner, I would think that cybersecurity would be my number one concern. I'd be worried about payroll, emails. I mean, just about everything.
Yeah, they are. And that's kind of the interesting thing is we've really changed from just implementing the fences and the locked doors now to, like I said, really getting an understanding of risk. Like we can't just run vulnerability assessments anymore. We have to actually quantify what the risk might look like for the business. And that's a risk analysis, not a risk assessment. And you got to kind of blend the two together to get a real picture of, you know, what can I do to really protect you, Mr. Customer?
Right,
you know,
right.
And they have to understand it in a way where it's not technical. They understand the risk. They can identify with it. And then, you know, they can then work with us to make an informed decision because somebody gave them enough information to do so.
Well, I'm going to have you hold on for a second because I love that you bring it down to layman's terms. I'm going to have you walk me through the process after a company's breach because we have business owners that are listening right now. I just want you to take me through the process. So I'm going to take a quick break. We're talking to Ryan O'Halloran. He's the Chief Technology Officer at Access One. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch at 720 WGM. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch. Ryan O'Halloran, the Chief Technology Officer at Access One, a cybersecurity company, is on the phone with us. We're talking cybersecurity. Ryan, I just got a text from 219 area code. I work for a small school corporation. We now have a cybersecurity rider on our liability and insurance. 2,000 kids on your network is a big risk. I mean, you think about sure. Kids, think about a small company that have all these employees on their network.
Yeah. Yes.
Same thing. You got to protect people. All right. I want you to walk me through the process after a company is breached. So they call you up. You guys come in. What happens?
Sure. So there's definitely a management process for the incident. So aforementioned, we talked about the preparation phase, right? So preparing is key to how that actually goes down. The second phase is really identification, right? So what we do is there's a lot of confusion between what is an incident and what is a breach, right? You hear about the breaches all the time, which is when data is actually exfiltrated, right? It's actually pulled away from the environment and taken by somebody else to do something malicious with. Incidents are not necessarily breaches, and those are things where you get a ransomware attack, where they try to hold you hostage. They haven't stolen any data from you. They're just trying to, you know, basically do business with you and profit off of this from a cyber crime, right? So what we try to do really is understand the magnitude first of what is this? Is it really a breach? Well, hold on a second. Maybe it's not. You know, it may just be an incident that's unusual. It may be adverse, right? So we really got to identify what we're dealing with.
Right.
And that's a delicate phase because a lot of times in the identification, you have to be careful to not elude the attacker of the fact that you're trying to assess the situation. Otherwise, they might back out and you might miss an opportunity. Then the next phase is really the containment. So what we do is then we go in and determine what type of containment strategy is necessary. And this is where I talk about risks a lot, right? So a short-term containment is, okay, let's find where the whack-a-mole is and let's whack all the moles and try to, you know, minimize the impact. But in some situations, when you're under an attack, it actually would be worse for a business's productivity loss to shut down and clean it up. So sometimes they actually have to keep running while they figure out what's going on and maybe build an environment in parallel or do something else to be able to to get out of it unscathed. And, you know, I think that's the flip side of it that you don't hear talked about. That's very complicated choice to make. You know, there's some IT security engineers that are like, let's get on this. And the business owners are like, hell no. You know, we're going to wait, you know, so for a minute until we really understand. So that's why, you know, getting the details and having a forensic investigation, that's really the next part. And then once you truly understand it, then it's eradication, right? Now we go in, whatever process we need to do to clean it up, you know, whether that's wiping out all the data in the environment and restoring from a backup,
right,
rebuilding it from scratch. It really depends on what the customer has. But that's where the preparation piece comes in, because if you have a solid backup, you can rewind to before this happened. And, you know, depending on how aggressive your windows are for backing up, it didn't, as far as the technology is concerned, it didn't happen. You know, you literally rewind it to prior, so there's nothing to clean up. And that's a great way to attack it. Now, if you don't have the luxury of that, then it can become a little bit more difficult, because you don't really know then, you know, what's going on.
When you were when you were going through this process, I was thinking to myself, why wouldn't a company have the backup? What would be the reasoning not to have the backup?
You know, it's kind of, this is the crazy part. So that's where technology is at right now. Like I said, it's all about the recovery process,
right,
and how fast you can get back up and running. A lot of organizations do have some type of backup, but the business owner themselves does not understand how quick they can get back up, right? So there has to be an upfront conversation that says, here's the spectrum of how much data you can lose and how quick you can get back online. And based on that spectrum and your risk, what is financially the right thing to do to mitigate that risk? And the way that technologies are now, it's like, you know, I run into some businesses that are still on tape. You're looking at days for recovery, and those tapes aren't necessarily, you know, they're not tested. You can't test them in production. I mean, the technologies now, you know, you have a little appliance or a little box that lives on site. If you have something happen, even if the whole thing has a utility failure, you could spin everything up on the other box sitting right next to it and go back to work, take a maintenance window later, you know, but without knowing that that's there, you know, you get this false sense of comfort. And unfortunately, after, you know, a lot of situations after we come in, that lesson gets learned the hard way, or even worse, the customer never got an opportunity to make that decision for themselves. And that's why that's so important to tie that in, man. You can kind of see how that's the case.
I mean, my head is just spinning thinking about this. I'm nervous, and I don't even own a company. I can't imagine being a business owner. Your sweet spot is what? Access One, is it medium-sized businesses? What is your sweet spot?
Yeah, we'll do small and medium business. So we do really well in the, the small business that needs that enterprise high-level touch where they really are approaching cybersecurity and business technology the way that larger businesses have resources for financially and their staff and things like that.
Right.
Well, the small businesses now are the targets of the attack, you know, and that's because they're pivot points to the larger data and the larger business, because they're less secure and they don't realize that they can be a pivot point and what type of liability they have. Right. So that's, you know, that's kind of the thing, is you really have to identify what really are the concerns so that you can address them properly.
Right. We're talking with Ryan O'Halloran, the Chief Technology Officer at Access One for the Wintrust Business Lunch. How about certification? Is certification a big deal in your industry?
It is. You know, it is. I get asked that question all the time, and it's such an interesting thing because, so unfortunately, the pool of talent is extremely shallow right now in cybersecurity. And there's a few reasons for that. One of the reasons is we're not set up really from a scholastic standpoint to really get into cybersecurity because of the pace of it. You know, I do this for a living and it's difficult for me to keep up
right. Doing
it for a living on the job
yep. And
being, you know, literally required to do that full time. So as you can imagine, trying to create a curriculum, push it through, you know, and by the time you talk about it, there's something else going on. And that's the difficult part. The other side of it is the cybersecurity certifications that are really sought after. A lot of people don't realize you can't just sign up. A lot of them actually require that you already have on the job experience and that you've demonstrated experience in those areas for 4 or 5 years, sometimes longer.
Okay.
You know, and that can be an equivalent to having a degree plus that and things like that. So a lot of these opportunities, you know, to get this level of knowledge require kind of that you already have something. It's very difficult to have the, you know, we think of it like this. We want to have the education and then get the job. And the way it's kind of set up is you got to have the job to get the education. So you start, you know, early on in like engineering and stuff like that. And, sure. You know, I know that's backwards, but, you know, it's tough. And that's one of the biggest challenges we deal with, you know, is hiring and fostering talent because it's tough to find, you know, and everybody's looking for it. So you really have to have a strategy on how can, you know, you foster, you know, these new guys that are coming up to give them that education and that career path to get into the know.
I'm sure. And, you know, we talked about business breaches. Before you go, what should we be looking out for as individuals? I'm sure phishing scams are the number one. And explain real quick, we have about a minute left, what phishing scams sure. are and what we can do as individuals to protect ourselves.
Yeah, so there's two main types of attacks. So for phishing, you know, that's a false sense of enticement, right? They're trying to either get information to get data from somewhere else or get information from you for whatever reason, transfer money, things like that. So just be very careful. You know, I think people are more aware now with the training and stuff like that, that, you know, don't click on things. If someone's asking you for money because that business owner's out of town, don't do it. Give them a call, that type of stuff. But there's another type of attack here called injection, SQL injection. And really simply and really quickly what that is all these web applications and everything in the cloud, they're vulnerable beyond what even the person who made that software is aware of. And a Secret Service guy actually did a presentation and told me, he goes, here's a SQL injection. Imagine an elder kid wakes up in the morning, writes on a post-it, Mom, we're out of this, this, and this groceries. Please go to the grocery store. And that's the intended thing you want to get done. Then the little brother comes out and sneaks in and says, and get candy. that's a SQL injection, right? There was an unintended instruction. And unfortunately, we're so vulnerable to that because of how quick things are moving that the sites and the things that we're creating to try to take advantage of all this technology and do it sooner,
right.
We're not spending the time on security. So there's those two things. So get a, you know, if you're a business, get a security seated in your development team because cybersecurity is really not as much there. And if you're an individual user, just be very careful what you click on and what you see.
The website is AccessOneInc.com. Ryan O'Halloran, Chief Technology Officer at Access One. You're the best, man. Thanks for coming on.
Anytime. I look forward and hope to do it again.
All right. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch. News is next. It's 720 WGN.
Well, you're one to talk about changing because that you're swapping your guitars almost every song.
No, not almost every song. Every song.
Well, every song.
Yeah.
And then you have this, keep in mind, I'm not a musician. What looks to me like this weird contraption of five guitars put together as one.
The five neck, yeah.
Well, I have three of those. One was ridiculous. Three is like, I can't describe it.
That was Cheap Trick on the big interview with Dan Rather last night. Cheap Trick's lead guitarist joins us now. It's Rick Nielsen. Dan Rather didn't really know how to process the five neck guitar, did he?
Well, now he does because I've offered it to him to play. We recorded that in June, so he's had a lot of practice since then.
Has he seen a Cheap Trick show? Did you invite him out?
Yeah, of course, but he hasn't showed up yet.
Well, explain to people that are listening right now, Rick, because who have never seen Cheap Trick before, you change out guitars after every single song. And why is that? Is that for a different sound, or is that because you have so many different guitars? Why is it? Or all of the above?
Well, originally did it because I hated seeing other guitar players, if they break a string or something, they'd have to tune up and, you know, put a string on and, you know, just waste the time. So I did it because of that, because I hit the guitar so hard that I'd knock it out of tune sometimes.
Because I'll go to a show like, I don't know, you name an artist and they have one guitar the entire time. When I see Cheap Trick, it's your guitar tech, like you said, every single song, man, that guy is hustling.
My ex-tech, he used to work for George Benson.
Okay.
And he used to say, here you go, George. Here's your guitar. I'll see you in an hour and a half. And then, and now it's like every 3 minutes, my guy's running around. And so, you know, if you're going to work for me, you're going to work for me.
Right. What is it with Dan Rather? The big interview is such a big thing now. This guy has become an elder statesman. I mean, he had so much credibility as a newsman, but now he's, I feel like he's gone a step above that. Would you agree?
Well, yeah, because he, you know, it's like he's done his homework. I mean, he's sure he hadn't been to too many Cheap Trick shows, but, you know, he actually said my name right. And, you know, and, yeah, he does his homework.
He does.
And so, he, you know, he's quite knowledgeable about it. You know, he's got a team of people that help. It's like, he's got to do all this stuff, and it's like there's no retakes or stuff like that. It's just, you know, we sat down, and it was an hour and a half later, we were done.
I love it, man. We're talking with Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick. I want to talk to you about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. There was an announcement about the finalists. Motley Crue is in there, Blink 182, Iron Maiden. These are for the fan poll, where people can go online and vote. Dave Matthews on that list, Cher, Styx, Boston Weezer. I hate the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I think they do everything wrong. I think Styx and REO should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Boston, of course, for sure. What's your opinion on this?
Well, they put us in, so I think they're the smartest people on earth.
Well, it took forever to get Chicago in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and then finally you guys get in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I mean, how does Madonna get in before you?
Alphabetical?
No, it does. It does not work that way. It doesn't.
Oh well. I don't know. I'm not gonna knock it one way or praise it too much because we're in. I'm not gonna want them to change their mind. You know, it's like do a recall or you know impeach us or something like that.
I don't know if anyone's any band's ever been impeached from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
There's a bunch that should.
And Cheap Trick never stops touring. You guys are always on tour, Rick.
We are? Oh, that's what we're doing.
Yes.
I see.
What city are you in tonight? Where are you?
I'm in Montgomery, Alabama.
Montgomery, Alabama. When do you get back home? There's a lot of changes in the Rockford area right now.
Are they? Well, what, have I moved out? All right. Cool.
Rockford got a casino.
It did?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Wow. Well, maybe I better get back there. I don't gamble, but maybe I should start.
The Hard Rock Casino is coming to Rockford. It's going to be right off I-90. You're not going to be able to miss it. And I'm assuming, and I've read, that maybe this will happen. There's going to be, instead of a Hard Rock guitar, it's going to be one of your big guitars.
Well, I heard that same thing. I heard there was a 110-foot Explorer in checkerboard at the front.
I think that is the greatest thing to happen to Rockford ever.
Have a guitar there?
I've talked to the governor, Rick, a half a dozen times. He's been on my show, and we always talk about Rockford, how Rockford doesn't get any respect. Finally, we get a casino, but it's just not a casino. And the fact is that your wife went to bat for this, and to get the Hard Rock Casino in Rockford is a big deal.
Really? Oh, you see my wife? I haven't seen her in a while.
Karen's doing some good work for Rockfordians over there.
Well, great. Yeah, she's a good person.
She is a good person, and she gives back to the community. People have probably asked you over the years, you've never left Rockford, and why is that?
Well, I leave there all the time, but I usually come back.
I mean, you've never moved.
You left Rockford, you know, not me.
I did. I was just there about a week and a half ago. I go back to Rockford all the time.
Yeah, well, I've been around the world, and it's like, you know, it's like you got to, you know, it's centrally located, so it's good for the getting to the airport, and you know, my family's there, and there's good people there.
Of course.
You know, it's like there's no great city that's like, it you know, serves all their, and it's all great. You know, there's good in every place, and usually when I'm there, it's not that good, but, you know, when others are there, I say, it's a, you know, I've been there with my parents when growing up, and then
right.
as we've been in traveling around the world, I mean, I always had a good place to come back to.
Right, that's home.
And I don't need another job, Pete. So
you don't.
But I'd like the people of the city of Rockford. We could use better employment, and we could use some things that are good for the city, and some interest in the city instead of just being, you know, the statistics that we read and see about. It's like it doesn't really tell the whole story. So
I agree 100%. Well, they talk about the unemployment. They talk about the crime. Rockford is a good city that has good people, and I love the fact that finally they are getting a landmark casino that people will stop on their way to Wisconsin's people. That is a destination now. You've made Rockford a destination, which I love.
Yeah, it was a good idea, except now what am I going to do? I got to get out of town occasionally.
Yes, yes, you do.
By I do that all the time.
By the way, people can see the big interview with Dan Rather and Cheap Trick on Axis website, or they can pull it up on demand. And by the way, you talked about when you guys were first starting out and how Live at Budokan kind of propelled you to stardom. That's where it really all started.
It continued. Yeah, it started the quote I use in the show, too. You know, we made the Budokan famous and the Budokan made us famous. And it's like nobody really kind of heard of it before. It's like we made it kind of at least a musical household word.
I didn't know what Budokan was. What year was Live at Budokan?
We went there in 78.
Okay.
And, you know, we were basically, around Rockford maybe in Chicago area, and we were sort of semi-known, but that really propelled it for us.
Did you hear about the line in Fast Times at Ridgemont High when Damone was selling Cheap Trick tickets? I mean, that's when you become mainstream, when you're in a hit movie like Fast Times that came out in 1982. It's like all the dominoes started to fall that
good.
Way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't pay the rent, but it was pretty cool to be mentioned. It's like there was Cameron Crowe. He liked the band, and we like him.
It absolutely helps.
And I liked the swimming pool scene, too. You know?
Yes, Phoebe Cates, one of the most iconic scenes in all of cinema. You're absolutely right. That's a great one. And Moving in Stereo by the Cars. I mean, I hear that song to this day. Moving in Stereo takes me right back to Phoebe Cates, the pool scene. You're right.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely right. Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick. Rick, always great to talk to you. Say hello to Karen.
And thank you for calling. All right. Adios, amigo.
It's 720 WGN. Pete McMurray in the Skyline Studios. It's 720 WGN. You just heard from Rick Nielsen. Big news for Rockford. The Hard Rock Casino will be built at State Street and the highway in Rockford. If you're familiar with it, the old clock tower location. Joining us is the mayor of Rockford, Tom McNamara. Tom, I couldn't be any happier for Rockford than I am right now.
Hey, Pete, thanks so much for having me on. Yeah, it's been a terribly exciting week in the city of Rockford. We, as you know, got the $311 million development out at the former Clock Tower site, which I'm thrilled to now call the new Hard Rock site. But we also had our airport called and named the fastest growing cargo airport on the face of the planet. So a lot of good news this week in Rockford.
Wow, I didn't know that about the airport. That's great news. I had the governor in, Governor Pritzker in when he was running for governor, and I talk about Peoria because I grew up in Peoria, but I always feel like Rockford gets the shaft. I lived in Rockford right after college, and I made lifelong friends. My wife is from Wisconsin. She lived in Madison, but we met in Rockford. So I have a soft place in my heart for that city, and I feel like over the years that the city has just got the shaft. And finally, some great news that Rockford's getting a landmark casino, the Hard Rock Casino. Now it's going to be a destination.
No doubt. And I think you're largely right. We've always gotten the shaft, as you say, from the state. I would say JP's been pretty wonderful to the city of Rockford. I mean, when I first met him when he was campaigning, gave him a laundry list of items, and he's pretty much ticked off, and when I say ticked off, not in a bad way, but off a list, all of the items I've asked for. He's helped our airport. He's now allowed the city of Rockford to be part of that gambling expansion bill, so we have a casino. Just done a tremendous job for the city of Rockford.
Well, he talked about programs, too, to put people back to work. You guys need jobs there. Is that happening?
So we do need jobs. I mean, every city needs jobs. What I'll say is we also need, right now we probably have more jobs available than we have residents to fill them. We actually need to make sure that we are doing more to educate and develop our current residents so that they are ready for the jobs that are available today and those jobs that will be there tomorrow. But we, I mean, literally, I mean, our airport's grown 1,000 jobs in 17, 1,000 jobs in 18, and is at 900 jobs now as of October 1 this year in growth. So we're seeing tons of growth in jobs, and about 3,000 to 5,000 jobs in manufacturing go unfilled each year. So we really need more development of our human capital, which we're working on as a community.
Right. We're talking to the mayor of Rockford, Tom McNamara, on the Wintrust Business Lunch. If you're the mayor of any city, people want to come to you with problems. I mean, it's, I just can't imagine you going to dinner in Rockford. People just want to come to you with problems, don't they?
Well, I would say they often have a lot of concerns, that's for sure. I mean, yeah. I was at a smaller neighborhood meeting this morning, but they also come with a lot of really good ideas. I mean, one of my things is get out to the community as much as possible. So, I mean, I'm at two neighborhood meetings already today. I'm going to an event tonight. The whole goal is to connect with residents. I mean, I'm here to serve them. So, yeah, they certainly do pose some issues, but at least they're engaging. And in a lot of communities, you see a lot of disinterest. And in Rockford, we're seeing tremendous engagement. I think that's what's really helping us move forward. We've seen a 26% reduction in violent crime since I took office in May, and things are heading in the right direction.
You know, you have the ear now of people listening in Chicago and all over the state, because this signal is so big. I mean, we call it the $50,000 blow, or the 50,000 watt blowtorch. I mean, what are the selling points for Rockford? Because a lot of people drive to Wisconsin, they drive right past Rockford. Let's get them into the city. Give us some selling points.
All right, high quality of housing at an affordable rate. We don't have the cookie cutter homes. We have the old fashioned, beautiful homes. They're at a low, incredibly affordable options. You don't have the drive time on the highway. You have the drive time on some of the best golf courses in the entire state. You have the arts and culture of a major city. We have the probably the best theater in the entire state, the Coronado Performing Arts Center. We have a river that runs through the heart of our city. We have 140 parks in our community. We have the Anderson Japanese Garden, which is internationally known. We have a children's museum, which is ranked top nationally in the country year after year. We have an art museum. We have a dance company, a symphony. We have all the amenities of a big city, but you don't have to spend 2 hours getting to work every day. It'll take you about 7 to 12 minutes to get there. And you can do it from an affordable place. You can now spend that money on your children, that time with your children, and going out to eat at some of the best eateries in the entire state.
When I lived in Rockford, that was the big thing. How long does it take to get there? 15 minutes. Everything's 15 minutes in Rockford.
Everything is 15 minutes.
And I live downtown on First Street. I love that area. I love that you're developing downtown close to the river. I mean, I feel like you're doing everything right now. You're on the upswing.
I mean, honestly, we paid about $900 million of public and private investment in our downtown probably over the last 5-6 years. We're opening up a brand new Embassy Suites hotel and conference center right in the heart of our downtown.
Right.
We have a company called Urban Equities that's done a tremendous job building apartments and loft living for all walks of life. A lot of wonderful things are happening.
And Tom, what is your story? Did you grow up in Rockford? Did you move there? What is your story? What's your backstory?
Yeah, so I'm born and raised in the city of Rockford on the west side. I went off to college in Cleveland, Ohio. I had the opportunity to enter for Senator Durbin, came back to the city, and really thought it wasn't going in the direction I wanted it to go into. And I told my wife, and she would tell you I'm a master complainer, so I figured you either complain or you jump in and do something. So we jumped in and did something. So I served as alderman of downtown for 4 years, and now as mayor for the last 2.5, and just having a blast doing it and giving back to my hometown, and hopefully making it a place that my kids and everyone else's kids want to move back to and stay in.
Right. You said you interned for Senator Durbin. I don't want to brush over that, because this is a guy, Senator Durbin, there's no downtime with him. He is always working. Even on the weekends, you see him holding press conferences, because he comes back to Chicago and he just makes it happen.
I will tell you, we are so blessed to have such a good delegation in Rockford, federal delegation. Senator Durbin, though, I mean, I've seen him work firsthand. What you said is totally accurate. He's first in and the last out of his office every single day. The guy is a tireless worker, and what's even best is he's one of the seemingly few now in Washington that are He's a true statesman. He has high integrity, high character, and he's there for all the right reasons to make sure that what he's doing is good for people. And some people can have critiques of him or not agree with every position, but right. No one can say the guy doesn't work hard, and no one can say that he's not honest.
Hey, we're all not going to agree, but we all have a common goal that we want to make things better. My cousin is Ray LaHood, the former Secretary of Transportation. We had Ray.
Yeah, wonderful guy.
We had Ray on the show the other night because he's now running the Lincoln Library and Museum, and he's worked with Senator Durbin, and Governor Pritzker called up Ray and said, hey, can you come and fix this? And Ray's like, absolutely. I love that everybody in different parties are working together in the state.
Yeah, it's honestly phenomenal. And I mean, Mr. LaHood's one of the same type of folks. Politicians have gotten such a bad name, but back in the day, I mean, people did it for all the right reasons. And hopefully we're slowly getting back to that, even though, in my opinion, President doesn't want to, you know, use language or accent in certain ways, but by and large, our local delegation here in Illinois does a phenomenal job working for the people.
Right. And don't forget about the Rockford Ice Hogs. I just got a text from 815 area code, so there you go.
Yeah, think about it. We're an affiliate of your very own Chicago Blackhawks.
Yes.
Half of the championship team was from Rockford. We are so fortunate to have that affiliation. Go Ice Hogs for sure.
And, Mr. Mayor, I told the people at the station, and I'm going to say it again on the air, when you open up that casino, I want to do a live show from the Hard Rock Casino in Rockford. I love it. I'm so happy for the city. Mayor Tom McNamara. Mr. Mayor, thanks for coming on, and hopefully I'll see you soon in Rockford.
For sure. Take care. Thanks so much.
All right. It's 720 WGN.